This is Radio Health Journal. I'm Nancy Benson. This week, using 3D printing to build organs for transplantation.
Take a very small sample of tissue from the patient, less than half the size of a postage stamp, three-dimensionally create the organ, and then put that organ back into the same patient.
What an inkjet printer has to do with organ transplantation when Radio Health Journal returns.
I'm Reed Pence, the producer and host of Radio Health Journal. If you like listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
Texting, tweeting, gaming, gambling, sugar, shopping, social media posts, you name it. Everything has been drugified today, making us all hooked and not wanting to stop.
It seems like addictive tendencies are lurking in every corner these days. Then,
I've really been lucky to not care so much about the repercussions of being myself.
We talk about the power of confidence with ballerino James Whiteside. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Listen to Radio Health Journal and Viewpoints on your favorite radio station. And subscribe and listen anytime on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Also, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Radio Health Journal.
Hundreds of thousands of people worldwide are alive today thanks to organ transplants. In the United States alone, since 1988, more than 500,000 people have received new kidneys. Nearly 200,000 have received a liver, and more than 80,000 have received a heart transplant. Transplants are far from rare, and unfortunately, so is the long wait to get a new organ.
There are about 100,000 people just waiting, I think, for kidney transplants. There are many, many other transplant lists for, I think, obvious ethical reasons, although there are some people who argue about it. There's no market for transplanted organs. We have to wait until somebody either donates them out of the goodness of their heart or somebody dies. Then we have to very rapidly match the organ to somebody who actually is in need of that organ.
That's Dan Troy, former chief counsel at the FDA and now general counsel at Valo Health. He says he's looking forward to a time in the not-too-distant future when doctors can grow new organs from a patient's own cells, so they're readily available and won't be rejected. It's already happening on a very limited basis.
There have already been artificial bladders that have been created. There have been fully functional kidneys, I believe, that have been created. Skin, cartilage, ears, these have all been done. Things that require vasculature, like I said, that's going to take longer.
However, a few organs are already obtainable in low-volume clinical trials. Dr. Anthony Atala, director of the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine, says in general, the simpler the organ, the sooner it will be available.
Flat structures such as skin are the least complex structure. Skin itself is very complex, but architecturally it's a flat structure, so it's less complex. Tubular structures like urethras, blood vessels are the second level of complexity because they're tubular, not flat. We have to allow air or fluid to go through at a steady state. Hollow non-tubular organs, like the bladder, like vaginal organs, are more complex because there's more interaction with other organs and the architecture is more complex. And finally, solid organs are the most complex, mainly because there are so many more cells per centimeter where the vascularity, the nutrition requirements are very, very high. And therefore, it's a lot more complex to achieve.
We are still years away from bioprinted hearts. But as I said, Israel already has a bioprinted heart that works the size of a rabbit. It's just a matter of getting it big enough to fit into a human. So it depends on the organ. I mean, in some organs, we're here already. In some organs, we're quite a ways away. A lung will take probably a very long time, although there has been a 3D printed air sac. So they're making progress even on organs that are as complicated as the lungs.
Growing those organs in the lab just once is hard enough. Being able to repeat the process to make lab-grown transplants truly an alternative is even more difficult. Atala is often credited with kicking off the organ-growing movement when he transplanted a lab-grown bladder into a patient 15 years ago. Today, he's looking at ways to mass produce custom organs from a person's own cells.
About 20 years ago, we started thinking we better start to look at scaling up these structures. You know, we were making these one by one, by hand. And we realized that if we are going to really be able to translate these technologies into a large number of patients, we needed to scale up the technology.
To do that, researchers are relying on 3D printers, similar to an inkjet printer, that precisely lay down layer after layer to build things. Manufacturers often use 3D printers to create plastic parts. But in this case, the printer is laying down human cells grown in the lab. It's called bioprinting.
Go to the patient, take a very small sample of tissue from the patient, less than half the size of a postage stamp, and we then are able to expand the cells, put them on the scaffold, three-dimensionally create the organ, and then put that organ back into the same patient. That's really the strategy. Once you take the biopsy from the patient, it takes us about 4 to 6 weeks to have enough cells for us to create the therapy for the patient. Because the cells are growing exponentially, right? So you start with one cell and they go to 2 cells, 4 cells, 8 cells exponentially, you can really get a major growth fairly quickly. So it is not as long as you would think. And that is actually consistent with what you would want to do in a patient, because realistically, you're not going to be engineering an organ immediately for a patient.
Most patients have lived for years looking for an organ. So Atala says a couple of months to grow cells usually isn't a problem. Once the cells go to the printer, it churns out a precisely engineered design.
Many people think the printer is just magical, right? You just push a button, out comes the organ. Nothing could be further from the truth. The reality is that the printer is just reproducing what you've already been able to do by hand. And it's just a scale-up tool. And that's why we started using the printers several decades ago, because we realized that we needed to scale up the technology. And the printer does give you advantages. So when we started using the printers, the early printers, we just started, you know, experimenting with your typical desktop inkjet printer. And instead of using ink, we started to use cells with a hydrogel or a gelatin-like material just to make sure the cells would be viable and they would survive and they would form the 3D structures that we wanted. But at the end of the day, what the printer also gives you is not just scalability, but it also gives you automation, gives you reproducibility, and it allows you to have a lower cost.
It costs a lot of money to do a kidney transplant. The average kidney transplant is about $300,000. If you can bioprint an organ, it's about $10,000.
However, getting to that point may be a tough process. Lab-grown organs are in a regulatory no-man's land for the FDA. They're not drugs, and they're not devices. So Troy says the agency will have to create a whole new set of rules to make sure they're safe. The FDA promised to do it back in 2017. It hasn't happened yet.
It's not quite clear how the government, specifically the Food and Drug Administration, is going to regulate this area. And when you don't have clarity on how the government's going to regulate things, then it makes it harder for people to invest in. It makes it harder for the science to develop. And ultimately, people are not going to be able to scale companies until they know what the regulatory pathway is for the approval of these products. Here, every end product is different. Now, in some sense, again, it's made by the same process, but each one is different because it's from different living cells. Now, if the technique is good enough, and if it shouldn't really matter, but the FDA understandably says, in God we trust, from everyone else we want data.
Troy says there are companies standing by with money and know-how, ready to jump in once they know the ground rules. Until then, lab-grown organs merely have lots of potential waiting to be tapped. You can find out more about all our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our studio producer is Jason Dickey. I'm Nancy Benson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment. Colleges and universities are trying to return to normalcy this fall. But with students living and learning in close quarters again, and the Delta variant running rampant, the risk of exposure to COVID-19 is increasing. 18 to 24-year-olds have the lowest vaccination rate of all eligible age groups in the U.S., and most universities are not requiring students to be vaccinated. Erica Hirsch is Vice President and General Manager of Asymptomatic Testing Solutions at Thermo Fisher Scientific.
Breakthrough infections among the vaccinated continue to occur, resulting in further viral spread and putting people at risk. This means that monitoring of community infection rates and frequent testing of all students, regardless of their vaccination status or expression of symptoms, will be imperative in providing proactive responses to any potential outbreaks at colleges and universities.
Some prominent universities in the U.S. are already mandating regular testing of all students. Find out more at thermofisher.com/COVID testing for college.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Radio Health Journal is a production of MediaTrax Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal.
This so-called team won't let me go to the doctor to take it out because they don't want me to have any more children.
The forced sterilization of women in our nation's past and present.
Then nail biting. When does it go beyond just a bad habit?
It's kind of crazy what nail biting can lead to. I mean, the list goes on.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.